Welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Monday, May 3rd, 2021. I'm Senator Mia Costello. It's 1:30 in the afternoon, and with me this afternoon is Senator L.V. Gray Jackson. Welcome.
Thank you.
Appreciate you always being here. And Senator Rivak, welcome. Appreciate you being here also. I'd like to thank our recording secretary, Kerry, and the LIO operator, Kelsey. Really appreciate your participation in making our meetings available to the public and for those who are listening online. Today we have two items on the agenda. We have HJR 14, which is a resolution related to Federal Safe Banking, the Federal Safe Banking Act, and that was introduced in the other body by Representative Rasmussen. And thank you for being here, Representative Rasmussen. Really appreciate you being here to introduce your resolution. So it's the first hearing in the committee. We have some invited testimony. We will open public testimony and then look to the will of the committee. So please feel free to introduce yourself and provide your introduction to your resolution.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate you taking the time to hear this resolution today. House Joint Resolution 14 came about when my husband, who is actually a mortgage originator, mentioned that he had somebody who had applied for a mortgage on their home and they were unable to qualify due to their employment being in the cannabis industry. And Alaska had legalized cannabis use, I believe back in 2012? Yeah. By over 53% of the population in the state had approved it. So I reached out to a few ladies in the industry and I kind of asked what challenges the industry as a whole was facing with basically safety measures and also accessibility to the various loan options and financial options for running their businesses, which should be considered legitimate by Alaskans. I learned that there were difficulties obtaining buildings because none of the businesses qualified for a traditional mortgage on that. If they rented the building and the building had a mortgage on it, the bank, Wells Fargo actually called a mortgage due on one of the landlords, so they had to have the tenant evacuate the building after they had spent tens of thousands of dollars investing in the upgraded HVAC materials needed to operate their business. And then I also learned that there were many Alaskans who had to travel from all over the state to Anchorage to pay their taxes in cash. So they're traveling across the state with tens of thousands of dollars in cash. They had to pay all of their utility expenses in cash, rent in cash, employees in cash, and it just seemed like there was a better way for them. So we decided to reach out and put a resolution together. We worked with our Congressman Don Young and Senator Sullivan and Senator Murkowski's office to bring language forward and produce a strong resolution. And we're hoping that Alaska can lead the country in kind of asking for this level playing field for all Alaskan businesses and to kind of increase transparency and safety measures.
So thank you very much, Representative Rasmussen. So the heart of the matter is, if I understand it, that at the federal level, it's not legal. It's not a legal product. And so therefore, the local businessmen and women who have these establishments are not being permitted to bank. And so all of their transactions are via cash, if I understand you correctly, and that this resolution is just asking the federal government to at least allow these businesses to fall under the Safe Banking Act, Federal Safe Banking Act.
Yep, that's correct.
Thank you. Were you interested in walking through a sectional or anything like that?
I have my staff, Scott, here to kind of go over just a quick summary of the resolution, and we're open for questions. We do have two invited testifiers as well that probably have a little bit more expert testimony than we can provide.
Okay, yeah, I can see them here on online, so... If you could walk us through the resolution, and then we'll go to invited testimony.
For the record, Scott Bergman, staff to Representative Rasmussen. She covered most of what the resolution, or Safe Banking Act, what it does. It essentially allows, it calls on Congress to pass the Secure and Fair Enforcement of Banking Act, or similar legislation. It would provide a safe harbor for depository institutions that provide financial products or services to legal cannabis-related businesses. Because right now it's a scheduled one felony, so any businesses that or any states that have legalized it, the feds, it's still a crime, so they can't access the banks. Since 1996, 33 states comprising 68% of the nation's population have legalized cannabis for medical or adult use. The most recent ones are New York and New Mexico. They just passed it a couple months ago, actually. And on the federal level, we have the House just passed on calling another Safe Banking Act, and then the Senate has introduced their own Safe Banking Act as well that is sponsored by both Senator Sullivan and Senator Murkowski. And we have Lacey Wilcox. She's from the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association. She can speak more to this issue and answer any questions anyone has.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have a question and a comment. Okay. So if somebody wants to buy marijuana right now, can they use a credit card?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. But all I want to say is I'm really thankful and happy that you're bringing this forward, and I look forward to seeing it pass at the federal level, because it's disheartening what these folks who are in this business have to go through, and it needs to change and soon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Reback?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. This really is a state's rights issue, and I really appreciate the sponsor for bringing it forward. I think it's dangerous. I think there's probably some significant security issues related to having stockpiles of cash. And on top of that, the people voted in favor. I think this is a state's rights issue, and I think that that definitely they should be allowed to conduct commerce after the vote of the people. So I just appreciate this legislation.
Thank you. And we do have a few individuals online. It sounds like there's some support for this. So if you could keep your comments brief, that would be appreciated. First, I'd like to welcome Lacey Wilcox, who's the president of the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association. Lacey, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony, please.
Sure. Thank you. I hope you can hear me okay.
Yep, we can hear you.
So, for the record, my name is Lacey Wilcox. I serve, as you said, as the president of the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association, known as the AMIA, in case I abbreviate myself here. So I first would like to thank the committee for the time today. I would also like to apologize, as our expert federal colleague had a family emergency and wasn't able to testify today. So I'll do my best to kind of capture what his sentiments likely would have been as we work closely together. So today I want to offer testimony on behalf of the Industry Association in support of the passage of HJR 14. And I want to thank the sponsor, Representative Rasmussen, and the several co-sponsors for putting this forward. And also I'd like to thank the House for its affirmative vote. So a resolution in support of the passage of the Safe Banking Act would send a message that this body cares about public health and safety, regardless of how you may feel about the legalization of cannabis in Alaska. Access to financial services is paramount in protecting Alaskans from the risks associated with large volumes of cash. And it's a tool, really, for law enforcement, tax collectors, regulators, auditors, and the like to identify less than honorable industry participants. As Representative Rasmussen mentioned, I think, or maybe Scott did, this would be the first state legislative resolution in support of this act. And I really do think that oftentimes people look to Alaska as leaders, thought leaders, and I think that there would be other states to follow Alaska's lead should this resolution pass, and I would encourage you to continue to be leaders on this subject. I'll just try and keep it brief. I want to illustrate for you guys just the potential volume and scale of our industry here in Alaska. Currently, there are more than 400 business entities. Those 400 business entities represent more than 500 individual cannabis licenses. Why there's a difference there is some companies have multiple licenses. They also represent thousands of shareholders and strictly Alaskan ownership shareholders, investors, and perhaps most importantly, we would estimate that there could be upwards of 10,000 or more employees in this sector. Often what I see are really passionate employees who have found their calling, so to speak. They love what they do. That is, maybe until they attempt to buy a house or a car or take out a student loan to further their education or apply for almost any other financial service that others would enjoy. These jobs and the people in them, we feel deserve access to financial services perhaps more than anyone. I would also like to mention the many ancillary support service businesses, which we don't often hear about, such as general contractors, plumbers, electricians, utility companies, and supply vendors, who have also found it pretty difficult to work with us as large payments for supplies and services are paid in cash or money orders, and that can put their financial services in jeopardy. So other than the real estate and the personal lending ability, just being able to conduct regular business is often hindered. So many Alaskan-owned cannabis businesses find success in this sector. They're looking to expand. They want to offer maybe health benefits or retirement programs to their staff, and obviously we are not able to do that without these financial services. So it's just a multitude of services that we can't offer that we would like to as we grow. And I'll wrap up kind of with a message that I've heard repeated from those who work in the financial service sector, that they would be supportive of this. They would love to bank our money. They would love to offer merchant services. As Senator Gray Jackson mentioned, you have to go to an ATM to make these purchases. So merchant services would be something that is profitable for them to offer for us. But the risks that are associated to them as institutions and personally as bankers has to change what reality allows. And this Safe Banking Act would serve to provide some assurance to them and some relief from the criminal liability that they feel kind of looming, and that's that safe harbor provision. So we really just are hopeful that we can get this cash off the streets into a vault where lawmakers, regulators, law enforcement can easily audit and see what's going on. I'm happy to take any questions. Again, thank you, Chair Costello, for allowing me time to speak.
Thank you very much, Lacey. Next, I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony on HR 14 and invite Ryan Tuseth from East Rip, calling in from Kenai, to provide testimony. Ryan, if you could state your name and your affiliation for the record, please.
Sure. Good morning, and thank you, Chairwoman Costello. My name is Ryan Tunseth, and I'm the owner of a retail cannabis business in Kenai called East Rip. In respect for the time of the committee, I'll be very brief and appreciate the support that I've heard from committee members already. But in urging your support of House Joint Resolution 14, supporting the passage of the Safe Banking Act or similar legislation by the United States Congress, I really feel like that this is a nonpartisan issue that's about protecting working Alaskans, and the legislature would be wise to pass this resolution because it sends a clear message that no matter what side of the aisle you're on, that one thing we can agree on is that we'll look out for the safety of our residents and that we'll protect the rights of our workers and our Alaska businesses. And, you know, as Lacey alluded to, obviously others have alluded to the transportation issue. Simply moving and handling large amounts of cash is problematic. Certainly there's an efficiency element related to the state's finances. There's nearly $2 million in unpaid marijuana taxes, and this would add a tool for the state to be able to audit against that, but it would also help businesses make those payments a whole lot easier. And finally, you know, there is an equity piece to this, the pieces that people have already identified about not being able to secure home loans because your payments may come from a cannabis industry. But deeper than that, being able to secure any type of financing or loans to start a business is very difficult. And so, you know, because of that, most of the people that got into this industry were able to do it because they had cash or they could, you know, rob 401k plans or something. And so others who may not have that ability, they're really blocked out of our industry right now because there's no other mechanisms for them to find funding. And so it sounds like, you know, it's a really well-understood issue on your guys' part. I appreciate Representative Rasmussen for bringing this up, and I certainly urge all of you for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Next, Michael Martin, who's with the Alaska Bankers Association. Michael, if you could introduce yourself for the committee and provide your brief testimony, please.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairwoman and committee members. My name is Michael Martin, and I'm the current president of the Alaska Bankers Association, and I'm also the chief operating officer and general counsel for North Rim Bank. I would comment today that the Alaska Bankers Association represents the seven banks that have operations in the state of Alaska, and that includes four state chartered banks and three national banks chartered by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, all of which have operations, substantial operations in the state of Alaska. The Alaska Bankers Association and all of the member banks support House Joint Resolution 14, which urges the federal government to adopt the Safe Banking Act to provide a safe harbor for depository institutions that provide financial products and services to legal cannabis-related businesses. You know, the Alaska Bankers Association and all of the member banks have never taken a position on the legalization of cannabis, but all of the banks are committed to serve the financial needs of Alaska consumers, businesses, and the communities of Alaska. So all bankers in Alaska are subject to federal law, and as you know, cannabis remains illegal under the federal law. So currently, banks face substantial risks if they offer banking products and services to cannabis-related businesses. Most notably, the big issue is a potential loss of charter, whether state charter or federal charter. The ability to do business in general, very much heightened federal regulatory scrutiny, and really loss of access to payment systems. So the Safe Banking Act is a bank-specific solution that enables banks to serve cannabis-related businesses. So it creates a safe harbor, was most recently passed by the United States House of Representatives, currently sitting in the Senate. The Alaska Bankers Association and I appreciate your leadership for bringing forward the resolution. And, you know, the real reality, as you've heard on the call already, is that cannabis-related businesses currently cannot open and maintain deposit accounts with Alaska banks. They cannot engage in electronic transactions, which includes, importantly, tax payments. And they have a very difficult time, if not impossible time, obtaining loans from banks, which you heard from the previous testimony. This causes these legitimate and substantially regulated businesses to deal in cash and money orders and find alternative means of financing and funds management outside of the banking system. I would also note that the American Bankers Association also supports the Safe Banking Act and have submitted letters and testimony to Congress signed by Rob Nichols, who is the current president of the American Bankers Association, and that happened as soon ago as March 17th of this year. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and a specific thank you to Representative Rasmussen for bringing forward the joint resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. And seeing no one else online who's interested in testifying, and there's never anyone in the room, I am going to close public testimony on HJR 14. I just have one final question for the sponsor of the amendment before we look to the will of the committee, but what is the is there another committee of referral for this, or
no, Madam Co-Chair, this is the only committee of referral, and there is only one committee in the other body as well.
Okay. All right, well, thank you. So anyway, thank you very much for being here. Senator Rivak.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Joint Resolution 14 version alpha, also referred to as 32-LS0617/alpha, be advanced from the committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving HJR 14? Okay, seeing none, it still moves, and thank you again, Representative Rasmussen, for being here to introduce your bill and to your staff also.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 130. This is a bill introduced by the committee, this committee. My aide, Melody Wilterdink, will be introducing the bill. Then we have two individuals here for invited testimony online, and we'll open it up for questions and take public testimony and then look to the will of the committee. So with that, welcome, Melody, and thanks for walking us through the committee bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to start with the sponsor statement for Senate Bill 130, Electronic Poll Tab Games. So traditional paper poll tabs are multi-layered tickets that have perforated sections that when they are pulled by tearing the perforation, they reveal symbols which indicate whether or not the player won the game. Poll tab gaming permits here in Alaska are exclusively available to charities for fundraising, and our charities in Alaska have benefited by receiving donations through poll tab games. Senate Bill 130 would allow poll tab operators the choice of providing paper poll tab tickets or electronic poll tab tickets, which are accessed online through a kiosk or a tablet device. Electronic poll tabs are played in the same manner as paper poll tabs, but there are no physical tickets for operators to have to count, deface, and store. Benefits of electronic poll tabs include increased security, easier tracking and reporting, and reduced fraud. Modernizing poll tabs makes it less onerous for small businesses to become poll tab operators in support of local charities. And I am now realizing, for the record, I'm Melody Wilterdink, staff to Senator Costello. And while we are talking about the physical tickets, I'd like to show the committee members what I have here. These are used poll tab tickets. Each individual envelope is one bartender's pull tabs that they sold and paid out during a single shift. This whole box is 6 weeks from a single bar. And so these pull tab tickets, the paper ones, create a ton of paper waste that is just not great for the environment here in Alaska. If we think about just 6 weeks for one bar, imagine every operator in the state, including the stores that only sell poll tab tickets. So this is just a huge amount of waste that we're talking about. Senate Bill 130 gives the option for operators and licensees to switch from paper poll tabs to electronic. They don't have to, but even just some switching would really reduce this kind of paper waste that we have.
Melody, thank you for that. There is also another issue, I think, which is equal to, if not greater than, the what you just discussed about the environmental waste, but the administrative burden to the small business owner to have to parse through what looks like to me something I might find in my garage, you know, after not cleaning it for 20 years. Could you describe a little bit more about what you know about the administrative burden and the possibilities for fraud, because the bartender is also selling product and they're also handling the pull tabs. Is that something that you're aware that the bill is trying to rectify?
Yes, certainly, Madam Chair. Thank you. And for the record, again, this is Melody Wilterdink. So for many charities, what ends up happening, the bar, the operator, is the one who puts out the upfront payment for these, but it's actually the charity themselves that have to bring the poll tabs to the bar. This is challenging for a lot of charities because their work is very different from poll tabs. They just want to use this for fundraising. Many of them will end up hiring a middleman, and that middleman can cost tens of thousands of dollars per year that is coming away from the charities. And then when we get into the bar, the individual pull tabs are profitable because they're small. So each one only makes a few cents for these charities. And when you're having to count out individual ones, not uncommon at all for a bartender to accidentally give an extra. This is always a loss for the charities and the people who are operating these charities. And so it's really hard to count, really hard to track. We've heard stories of people taking a winning pull tab from one bar and then slipping it in at a different bar and getting paid out twice. So the fraud is pretty onerous, and that falls on the bar owners, the operators, who are the ones who are putting up the upfront cash to support these charities.
Thank you. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Melody. So the only question I have is, so when somebody wins, how is the payout?
So it's still cash. Thank you, through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson. It's still a cash payout. So they're still loading a kiosk or a tablet device with cash. So the operators will load that up and they can, you know, give $10, play 10 pull tabs, give 50, play all night. And then the payout is also in cash when they decide they want to get their payout and return the tablet or leave with their little receipt from the kiosk and take it back to the bartender.
Can I follow up, Madam Chair?
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm still not clear on when it's done electronically. I mean, I like this idea, but I'm thinking about, you know, when somebody's in person and they get paid right away. And I know that there are other pull tab issues that are already doing things online, because, like, in New Jersey, my sister does stuff online, and she gets a check in the mail. So that's why I'm asking for a little bit of clarity on exactly how, when somebody wins, especially if it's big, how are they going to get that pay when they're doing it electronically? Is it going to be a check in the mail? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson. For the record, this is Melody Wolterdink. So that would be up to our regulations, I believe. And we have two people from the Department of Revenue online who might be able to better answer that question and how we'd set up this system here.
And Senator Gray Jackson, I think to help further a little understanding about this, the pull tab kiosks will still be in the four walls of the establishment. It won't be something that happens off-site. So as opposed to the charitable gaming bill that we saw where individuals were sitting at home in their living rooms and they were donating to the charity, in this situation, just like the pull tab boxes are physically on the premises, the electronic device will be on the premises. And I can imagine maybe even bolted onto the table or perhaps in a fashion like that, but we do have individuals online who are waiting to testify on this. So perhaps if anyone wants to elaborate on that for Senator Gray Jackson, that would be great.
Madam Chair, thank you. If I can follow up, you just clarified it because maybe I misread or something, but my understanding was that I'd be at home doing it online. So the folks would be right there where they usually are, just through electronic device. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we've been joined by the Senate President. Welcome, Senator Machicki. Thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Now I'm going to go ahead and open the invited testimony portion of the committee. And Angela Fraze, the Communications Director for the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, if you could state your name for the record and provide your testimony, please.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Awesome. Thank you. I am Angelina Fraze, and I am the communications officer for the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. And I'm here to chat and talk about the support of SB 130. I have been in law enforcement about 20 years in Anchorage this year. And what a lot of people don't know about our Employees Association is we have a nonprofit arm called the Anchorage Cops for Community. And for many years, we tried to do positive things in the community to not only humanize our police officers, but to connect with the community in non-law enforcement ways. In 2017, we started the nonprofit Anchorage Cops for Community. And since then, we have tried all types of fundraising. And I think what a lot of people don't know is how much money a lot of charities get from gaming. And in the first three years that we were operating our nonprofit, we have received over close to $100,000 in gaming money, and that allows us to meet our mission. And the mission of Anchorage Cops for Community is to foster and inspire community well-being through collaboration between the community and law enforcement. So not just doing great things, to humanize our police officers, which is, as we all know, very needed this day and age. But we run projects such as Shop of the Cop, where, you know, kids from the shelters all over Anchorage can come and shop for Christmas, a back-to-school event where needy families can come and shop for back-to-school, new backpacks, jackets. And then, of course, monthly, we try in non-COVID years to meet with the community through Coffee with a Cop. We have a lot of other programs. And through the nonprofit, we also give to five main charities at the end of each year if we can. So this is a great way to have folks in the community responsibly partake in gaming, but also have the nonprofits really be able to do their business. Anchorage Cops for Community does not have any staff. So the APDEA, we do have a part-time staff member that helps the Anchorage Cops for Community, but we don't have staff. So some of this gaming, all the technicalities and things like that can be quite overwhelming to small nonprofits like us. And then again, just coming off of a COVID year with very little fundraising, very little fundraising, no events to be had. You know, we're looking at the future of even being viable and able to do what we do in the community. And that future looks a bit bleak unless we get back to some events and whatnot. So I would just support it just in bringing it up to speed with modern times. And so it makes it a little bit easier. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Angelina. Are there any questions that the committee members have? Okay, seeing none, I appreciate you providing that testimony from a charity. I really think that's an important aspect of all of this. Next, if Jack Tripp is online, the former owner of the Vikings, is Jack online? No? Okay. So I will go ahead and open public testimony for Senate Bill 130 and invite John Powers. John, if you could provide your name and affiliation for the record and then your 2 minutes of public testimony.
Hi, my name is John Powers, and I'm with the Tudor Bingo Center in Anchorage. And like Senator Jackson, I think it's a good idea, but I would advise some caution. I'm kind of in opposition to this right now, just because the gaming industry has evolved very rapidly. Electronic pull tabs are currently in several different versions. Handheld units, tabletop units, and kiosks that you walk up to, like a video machine slash slot machine. They look a lot like slot machines, and they play a lot like slot machines. The play is very rapid, which can lead to customers and guests overspending, and this is something that we look out for in our organization. We'd like to see the payout limits remain the same. And this bill will change the way charitable gaming is currently conducted. The states that have adopted electronic pull tabs generally have specific rules and guidelines, and that's what we'd like to see, is to kind of table this issue, at least for this legislative session. You know, we're leaders in the industry. My wife has a bingo hall in Wasilla out in the valley. And my wife actually sent an email with a picture of the current terminals to all the folks on the panel today, on the senators. And hopefully you folks have that. But at this point, I would urge that we just pause for this legislative session and get some input from leaders in the industry like myself and other folks around the state. I heard a couple of comments, the Anchorage Cops for the Community. We raise money for APOA, Anchorage Police Officers Association, Fraternal Order of Alaska State Troopers, several law enforcement organizations. I also heard a comment about the waste of pull tabs. You know, I have a truck that shows up at my facility, and we recycle all the pull tabs. Everything is recycled. What's not stored is recycled, whether it's in a dumpster or it's in our garbage cans, our locked garbage cans that are inside the facility. And another thing to look out for is you want to limit potentially how many terminals or machines are going to be at each facility. I mean, you don't want to have a building, say, like mine with 300 machines in it. I mean, that would be, you know, that's basically a casino. So, again, John Powers in opposition right now, but would like to see this this bill actually be get some input from folks like myself and others around the state. And that would, I think, we would come out with a much better bill in the end, be able to manage this process. And because there's a lot of bad actors out there. I have an illegal gambling joint right next to my pull tab store in the strip mall that I'm in. And currently, Anchorage Police Department is supposedly investigating that, but they've been in business for 6 or 8 months now. And it's an illegal, basically operating slot machines. So, anyway, just want to put that out there and make sure that you folks are educated, which I know it's hard to get educated in charitable gaming because that's not what you folks do for a living. And I hope you appreciate my input.
Thank you, John.
Thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. We really appreciate your time and you calling in. Just for clarification for the members of the committee, the bill does not mandate electronic pull tabs. It would just make it an option. So if there's a business that would prefer to do it the way it's happening now, and then also the regulation process would be the process where all of those fine details were looked at so that it stays within the guidelines of the current charitable gaming laws. Senator Gray Jackson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Don, thank you for your testimony. As you know, your Tudor Bingo is in my district, and I was involved when I served on the Anchorage Assembly when you were moving the facility from one area to the next, and I even had the opportunity to have a tour, as if you can remember, of your bingo hall when it was at the other location. But a couple of questions. The first one is, do you have pull tabs at your bingo hall?
Yes, Senator, we do.
Okay, thank you. May I follow up, Madam Chair?
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And were you aware that this, with this bill, that you have a choice? You don't have to do electronic gaming if you didn't want to?
We were aware that that option would be provided to current operators and charities.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more.
You've got to walk on thin ice with these things. We've been doing this for many decades, and Senator Jackson, I don't know if you remember my brother Jack Powers, but he started this company back in 1993, and there have been a tremendous amount of bad actors that have come and gone in this industry, and like I said, there's an illegal place right next to my pull tab store in the same strip mall, and we're trying to get them booted out of town, but it takes a long, long time, and these machines could lead to that kind of activity being conducted in Anchorage and all over Alaska, and we just want to make sure that if this does go through, that the regulations are tight, and that everyone is educated on what could potentially happen and go sideways, and then we all look bad. And then the charities suffer. That's the biggie right there. I mean, I typically raise over $2 million for charities annually. And, last year due to COVID, we were unfortunately only able to raise less than $1.5 million. So hopefully this year will be better. But that's who we're looking out for, is the charities as well.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Senator Jackson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gray Jackson, thank you. But, yes, of course, I remember your brother, Jack Powers, because he lived in my subdivision for a lot of years. And I also want to take this opportunity to thank you for your email. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next, I'm going to go to Jack Tripp. Jack, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony, please. You were under invited testimony, so I want to just remind members of that.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
We're doing all right.
That's good. I had a bar. Now, I no longer have a bar, but I had one for over 32 years, the Viking Lounge in Juneau, Alaska. And we ran quite a few pull tabs and helped the charities out a lot. The prior caller said, maybe we need to take time and wait. We were talking about this 20 years ago, and one time, for me at least, I had a catastrophic theft by bartenders, and it almost put me out of business. Now, I absorbed all of that. The charity absorbed none of that. And like the previous caller, I donated millions of dollars to different charities. This is a way to safeguard. It's all encapsulated. There's no theft. Someone comes and loads the machine. To me, it makes sense. It makes it so there's less bad actors. You know what I mean? It takes out some of the human error. A lot of people think that pull tabs are a big money thing. Now, we were a vendor, right? And so we automatically paid 70% to the charity, and 30% went to us. But the profit margin on one of those pull tab games might be $300. So you're selling 3,000 tickets to make $60, right? Or $90, I'm sorry. Whereas if, you know, and you got to pay the bartender to do this and all of that. So if you had a machine where you take out that human error, you take out the human time, right? It just makes sense to me. We're not talking about turning Alaska into Las Vegas. We're talking about cleaning up an industry that probably needs a little cleanup. I guess that's what I wanted to say. And if you have any questions for me, I mean, I've been in the business a long time.
Thank you, Jack. This is Senator Costello. You mentioned at the beginning of your testimony that you've been talking about this for 20 years. Is it is there a concern that you think that is still unresolved related to electronic poll tabs, or do you think that it's the right time to move in this direction?
I do think it's the right time. And if you got, you know, people who want to stick to the paper poll tabs, they can do that, right? But I think they're going to find that people are going to like this. I think it's going to increase gaming, if you want my opinion, and only help the charities. You know, I think the only people that are probably going to be hurt by it are people who stick to that paper ticket, you know, because people are going to really like that machine. I mean, let's face it, when you do go to Las Vegas, you know, you turn towards those machines and, you know, they're bright and shiny and, you know, it's fun. It adds to the experience.
Okay. All right, Jack. Well, I appreciate you taking time to call into the committee today. And if there are other questions, I'll make sure that we pass those on to you.
Yeah, and one last thing that I want to reiterate, it's hard to steal from a machine. It's easy to steal from one of those bins.
That's a very good point.
yeah.
So next, I think we'll continue on with the public testimony portion of the meeting. And Sandy Powers from Willow, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Sandy Powers. Yes, I'm related to John Powers, and I operate Big Valley Bingo in West Ella. And we have been looking into electronic poll tabs for quite some time. We run electronic bingo. And our biggest concerns really are that, I don't know, it's just that the play is super fast. And yes, it is going to increase the revenues for the charities and the operators. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that as you get into faster and faster play with electronic pull tabs, there can be tendencies for people to overspend, more so than paper pull tabs because it's slower. Electronic bingo isn't faster and faster play because they're playing at the same speed of a bingo game, so it's not faster play. So I'm just wanted to bring that point up that there can be a tendency for people to overspend. It could possibly be something that might draw in people from the tourism industry, which is something that we don't pull from typically. But just being aware of the fact that the faster the pull tab play goes electronically, the more financial problems you and societal problems you can see. But I also understand a lot of the comments that, and there's some legitimacy to them as well. So with the inability to steal from the machine, and there still has to be a tremendous amount of cash on hand to pay out. So the faster the play is in the machine, the faster, the more money you're going to be paying out. So that concern, the catastrophic robbery that he had, is not really going to be answered with that, because the establishments are going to have more cash on hand to pay out more winners the faster the play is. And so that's been one of our concerns along the way as well, is always the safety of the cash handling.
Well, Thank you very much, Sandy, for providing your testimony and for your patience today. I know there's quite a few folks online. One of the individuals online is Scott Henneman with Grover Gaming out of North Carolina. And Scott, could you respond to the concern that was just brought up about the speed of play? I mean, in your experience, has the speed of play increased when you go towards the electronic, or can you actually program that into a device?
Madam Chair Costello, members of the Senate Committee, my name is Scott Henneman. As the chairman had mentioned, the chairperson. As far as the speed of play, when you open up many pull tabs can be just instantaneous in like seconds if you open up many of them in paper format. But as far as electronic format is concerned, it can be programmed, but it's handled by the regulations, and you can follow the regulations in other states. Speed of play has not been an issue that I have seen with the business that we do in the many states where it's legal and charitable in both lottery and gaming markets. My position is that I'm vice president of business development and governmental affairs for Grover Gaming, and we are one of the largest charitable gaming manufacturers in the U.S., and I've been involved in charitable gaming for over 30 years, from being a gaming regulator myself to working in the private sector manufacturing paper and electronic pull tab products. And I've seen the necessary modernization that's taken place in charitable gaming in order to keep it viable. I'm testifying in favor of the bill today, Senate Bill 130, and electronic pull tabs, or they're also known as e-tabs, and they follow the same exact fundamental characteristics of paper pull tabs. The only difference is that e-tabs are played on a touchscreen monitor, offering digital display and allowing pull tab play to be offered through new channels of technology. Now, these characteristics are just like the paper game, where you have finite and predetermined winners that are in a box of pull tabs. And each one of these games have a predetermined payout and profit. So it's completely different than a slot machine, like what has been mentioned before. It can be very easily distinguished from a slot machine because a slot machine uses a random number generator to determine its outcomes, where paper pull tabs, you're playing one ticket one at a time, and you get the outcome that was already predetermined on that ticket. Electronic pull tabs are player versus player, unlike a slot machine, where it's player versus machine, or a player versus a poker machine, for example. If you imagine a fishbowl and you dump a whole box of tickets in a fishbowl of paper tickets, you can imagine players pulling those tickets out one at a time and competing for common prizes. So they're not playing against a machine, they're playing against each other. And some people talk about what a electronic pull tab device might look like. You know, it could be a standalone kiosk, it can be a handheld tablet, or a link device that allows players to play electronic representations of the paper pull tabs. All hardware and software are tested and approved by an independent laboratory to ensure that all the games that the charities offer fit the rules and regulations. That will be determined by the Department of Revenue and its charitable gaming division. So things like speed of play, that has not really been an issue that I've dealt with in other markets, because I think the speed of play of paper can be quite fast as well. The electronic pull tabs are used as a fundraising activities in many states like Virginia, Minnesota, Kentucky, New Hampshire, North Dakota. There are also lotteries that have charitable gaming divisions under them, and they also have them as their own fundraising tool. Some of these lotteries are Idaho, Maryland, Missouri, Michigan, the Ontario Lottery Corporation, and the province of Ontario. And there's so many benefits to these charities. And again, there is a choice, like what's been mentioned earlier. You can offer the paper product or you can offer the electronic product if it's approved. But one thing is new players. Our bingo players and pull tab players aren't getting younger. And in this technology era that we're in, new players are familiar with and they prefer to play games with a visual digital play accompanied by a sound stimulus. And charities don't have to store or manually add tickets to machines when they're in electronic format. There's no physical inventory to count. And there's a lot of advantage for the charities and the operators, the ability to monitor each machine from an internet connection making scheduling and orders and reporting for the regulatory agency more efficient. Speaking of the regulatory agency, electronic pull tabs have a lot of advantages over paper when it comes to accountability and regulation. With the computer systems used for electronic pull tabs, sales are pulled and collected in real time, and it's updated to state regulators. And all of this communication is encrypted to maintain security and integrity. The computer systems use and they retrieve all events that take place on site where an electronic pull tab is being sold. For example, regulators know every time a door is open on a machine. They even know when a malfunction occurs. Sales reports, inventory reports can be generated at a moment's notice for the regulator and the charity, so there'll be more integrity and accountability. Just to finish up here and to recap, the electronic pull tabs provide a regulatory peace of mind. They have increased security. They have more accountability than paper. It's an advanced delivery system without human intervention. There's real-time polling for observation by regulators, and it adds more incremental revenue to Alaska charities if passed. I would urge you to pass Senate Bill 130 in order to modernize gaming for charities. And I thank you very much for this time this afternoon. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to thank you for your testimony and everybody else who's testified and those who are waiting to testify. For clarification, are you currently using electronic pull tabs in your business?
Yes. We manufacture the actual device and the tickets themselves that are loaded, and then they are loaded through the Internet to a site controller that's on site at a bingo hall or a charitable gaming site that sells pull tabs. So, yes, we do offer those products now.
Mm-hmm. Right. If I can follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson.
So my question is, in your business, though, I know you said you manufacture the machines, but in your business, have you used electronic pull tabs? And I'm asking this question for a reason.
Senator Gray Jackson, you're asking me as a player if I use them?
No, I'm asking you. To tell you the truth, I don't know what kind of business you have, but maybe I should rephrase the question. So you manufacture these machines, and so you sell them to businesses. Correct. Is that correct?
Senator Gray Jackson, that is correct. Yes, we are the manufacturer. Just like I've been a manufacturer of a paper pull tab product, and we sell those to charities and to businesses.
Right. If I can follow up, Madam Chair.
Senator Gray Jackson.
So the real question I'm getting at is, you know, because we've heard testimony on people spending more, you know, what's your thoughts on that? Folks that you've sold these machines to, have they come back to you and said, oh, yeah, folks are spending more money because of this machine? I'm just trying to understand that comment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Scott, are you able to respond to that?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Gray Jackson, that has not really been an issue that's come up with us, that people are spending more money because it's an electronic format versus paper format. You know, the state of Minnesota, for example, in 2019 sold $1.4 billion in paper pull tabs. And that's for their hockey teams, their sports teams, parks, things like that. Electronics were $600 million. So there's a lot more paper that's sold. They just have a high volume in paper. This is incremental sales for charities, and it doesn't cannibalize the paper product. And we've just not had people come to us and say this is faster play and that it causes more social ills. I'm answering that to the best of my ability.
Thank you, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Scott. And I think it's an interesting approach to looking at this. I mean, I think if you're selling both the paper pull tabs and the electronic devices, and so have you seen states that have offered the option, and can you talk about do the electronic devices tend to become a higher percentage for those states? And then also, in your business, are you seeing about the same? It sounds to me like you're seeing less revenue for the electronic than you are the paper.
Madam Chair, it depends on the state, but the thing that was very important to us was that when electronic pull tabs were introduced, that they would not cannibalize existing products like paper pull tabs and bingo. There's a social aspect of paper pull tabs where people want to buy paper pull tabs and pull their money together, bring them back to the table, and open them in a social environment. That social environment does not go away when electronics is offered. Electronics is, you know, players play the device. If it's a tablet, they can bring it back to their table. If it's a kiosk, they can sit at a booth or sit at a stool and play. It gives the player a choice. The thing that's interesting about Alaska, it's a very mature market for paper pull tabs, and it's probably one in the top six markets of paper pull tabs in the country. You have a player base there that enjoys the paper pull tab game and bingo. And I think that, and they're aging, as I mentioned. So if, you know, there are new forms of playing the same game, but just using modern technology, I think you'll see more incremental sales to new players. So, yes, it's in some markets, it's just been incremental sales, and it's increased paper sales, like in the state of Minnesota. It's increased sales in the state of Virginia of paper products.
Interesting. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate you being online and providing testimony. Next, I'm going to invite Nancy DeCherney with the Juneau Arts Council to introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Nancy DeCherney. I'm the Executive Director for the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, and of course, right this minute, the FedEx man's coming to the door. But I'm calling in to testify in favor of SB 130. Nonprofits really benefit from the pull tab operations. I would say we no longer have a pull tab operator for our organization because I think the points that have been made about it being more efficient will allow, it is very cumbersome to run a pull tab operation for small operators. And so I feel like in the interest of trying to support more charities in this state, this particular bill will help make that possible. And so I really think that you should look at this very carefully. It'll be easier to manage, easier to track, and perhaps make more profits available for nonprofits in the state. And that's all I want to say. Thank you very much for your time, and thanks for considering this.
Thank you, Nancy. Next, Mac Miner, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony, please.
Hello, this is Mac Miners. I've been involved in charitable gaming for over 20 years and have seen both facets of vendor relationship, and my son is an operator. We've operated in Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, Wasilla for many years. And I want to clear something up. When the first person spoke about the bars, that is not operator, that is a vendor relationship. And yes, there is some trouble in bars. They do misplace the tickets. And things get misplaced, and however, Mr. Tripp clarified it, that the vendor pays 30%, he gets 30%, and the charity gets 70%. And once the pull tabs are bought by the vendor, they're theirs. And if they have any kind of defugality, sometimes it gets passed, but to have strict quality control is very efficient to have. Grover called me up when they first decided to come to Alaska, and I listened to him, and I thought that the way he presented himself was a good opportunity to clean up the game, make it a choice for a player to play electronically or with paper. We have, you know, you can make mistakes very easily. Try counting to a million and see how many mistakes you make. And people are human. And I think that if you went to electronic gaming, even as he said, you gave people a choice, I think that would be the way to go. But I think that when you have a relationship with a charity and you're trying to get the charity as much money as you possibly can, that paper pull tabs, even though the cost of shipping and paper is going up and the profit becomes a little less, it is, in my opinion, would be beneficial to see whether, and you have the choice of whether electronics is going to make the charity more money or less money or go to paper. But I think as we go on with gaming, it has to change some. I just came back from a recon mission to Las Vegas, and it showed me a lot after the pandemic. And what they've gone to is walls, maybe 60 feet, 20, 20, and 20, of virtual gaming, whether it's roulette, blackjack, or baccarat, and everybody has their individual kiosk. As COVID hit, it hurt business a lot, and people are just now gradually coming back to charitable gaming. And I think that if you can offer something new to them, and I think that that would be helpful for the charities, but not losing sight of the charity and where the money goes is the real intention of this whole charitable gaming thing. And I really do truly think that it would help out if you gave them a little something new, and really to increase the prize limitation to make the game a little more exciting. You don't have to increase it a lot. Years ago, they had a $1,000 pull tab. Now we have a $500 pull tab that gives you the satisfaction of not having to write a 1099 to anyone. Because when you're in a casino and you have a win over a certain amount, they issue you a 1099 so that you can pay taxes. I think that anything you can do to help out would be good. And if you wanted to expand charitable gaming a little bit, I think the Grover scenario of how they want to set things up would probably work in Alaska. If it didn't, it would probably go away. But I think if you gave the people to have the choice of both, would be a great opportunity for charitable gaming.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mac. And please tell Kevin I said hello.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman.
Next, I'd like to invite John Green, calling in from Wasilla. If you'd like to provide testimony, or are you on for questions, John?
I was appreciative of this opportunity, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Jonathan Green. I'm with the firm Kempel Huffman and Ellis. We were hired by a client to provide some legal analysis on SB 130 as to whether it would expand any of the requirements on the state to negotiate with tribal entities for Class 3 gaming. And in short, the answer is no. I wasn't sure if any members of the committee had questions on that, but I can elaborate more if need be. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm looking around at the committee members. Does anyone want a further elaboration on that? Okay, I guess not. Jonathan, thank you so much for providing that information to the committee. I know oftentimes there are bills that have far-reaching consequences, so it's always good to run it through the committee process to get some answers. Next, I'd like to invite David Lambert from Fairbanks. David, if you could provide your name and affiliation for the committee and then your testimony, please.
Yeah, my name is Dave Lambert. I'm a operator for Charitable Gaming, and I raise funds for over 30 different nonprofits that really depend on the funding. 30 years ago when I got in there, 25 years ago when I got in this business, a dollar pull tab was a dollar. It's still a dollar. All our expenses have gone up. The cost of paper has gone up. The wages have gone up. Our rents go up 3% a year. everything's going up, but a dollar pull tab's still a dollar. And we need to do something. Our customers are an older generation, and they are dying off. And it's going to electronics is not going to increase their spending, but it's going to open it up to our digitally minded customers, which is going to bring in new customers, which is needed to support the industry. The biggest concern I see and I hear from people is that they're afraid big casinos are going to come in. So in my mind, I think this legislation should include limiting the number of machines per location so it doesn't turn into a full-blown casino. We're also getting told by the manufacturers that they're running out of product and they can't keep up with paper pull tabs. And I've been told by some of the distributors they're not getting some orders until August from some of these people. And we'd be in a world of hurt, and so would the nonprofits if we can't do something. But the time has come to modernize and to create a new way to fund these nonprofits. And I'm open for any questions.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, David, for your comments. Could you give us a recommendation on the limit of the number of machines that you might think is reasonable?
You know, in my mind, I'm open for suggestions, but I'm thinking a half dozen machines on a location because you don't want somebody to open up and put in 50 machines and look like a mini casino. And we want to keep it reasonable. And I guess we'd have to look at some of the other states, but I believe a lot of states have limitations also.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Because each of these machines can hold 20 or 30 games on the machine.
So, thank you very much, David. And we do have Colleen Glover and Katrina Mitchell. Colleen's the director of the tax division in the Department of Revenue, and Katrina is the gaming manager in the tax division for the Department of Revenue. For either one of you, if this bill were to pass, the Department of Revenue would be drafting the regulations. Would this change at all? Katrina, perhaps this is for you. Would it change the application process for an entity to sell pull tabs, or do you see it expanding in some way?
Senator, this is Katrina Mitchell. So if I'm understanding your question correctly, are you asking would there be a different application process if we added a new game type such as electronic pull tabs?
No, actually, my question really was just passing on Mr. Lambert's concern that currently if there was a certain number of paper pull tabs boxes in an establishment, if we passed this and it became electronic, his concern was that you could have more more devices and that might turn into a different type of environment, I guess.
Through the chair, Senator, I'm afraid I still don't understand the question. I guess I would say that there's not a limit on the amount of paper pull tab games a permittee or a licensee may offer at any one time. And so I suppose if we did want to limit the electronic pull tab games, it would require a change in the statutory or regulatory guidance.
Katrina, no, I don't think that we're interested in limiting. I just think that there probably, if I'm hearing everyone correctly, that there are natural limits because the, for example, the bar owner would be purchasing the boxes in advance. So the limit would be the amount that they feel that they are able to sell. So I think the free market here is what's providing the limits. Also, while you're online, could you explain, does the administration have a position on this bill?
So, Chair Costello, Colleen Glover, Tax Division Director for the record, the administration doesn't have a position on this bill.
Okay, and Do you believe that there might be less fraud? I mean, when I say the word fraud, I don't mean necessarily intentional, but less opportunity for inaccurate records if electronic poll tabs were available?
Chair Costello, Colin Glover for the record. As right now, we're not really sure until we have more information. We did talk to Grover to try to get some more information from them to understand how this would really work. And we're engaging with other states that have passed legislation to allow electronic poll tabs to better understand how it really works to confirm that this would be more secure.
Okay, thank you. I think I'm going to take a brief at ease. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is called back to order, and seeing that there's nobody else online or in the room to testify, I am going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 130. Senator Rivak?
Yes, Madam Chairman. I move Senate Bill 130, version ELF, also referred to as 32-LS0811/ELFA. Be advanced from the committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving Senate Bill 130 from committee? Okay, seeing none, so moved. And this concludes our meeting for this afternoon. Unless we want to stick around and count to a million, but I think we'll pass on that. Our next meeting is Wednesday, May 5th at 1:30. The committee will consider Senator Begich's Senate Joint Resolution 15, recognizing the Alaska-Canada relationship, and also bills previously heard or scheduled. So with that, we are adjourned.